Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Get big savings on big equipment for one big day at United Rentals on South Frontage Road in Columbus, Thursday, October 2nd from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Hey, this is Tiffany Blackston. Call me today for the equipment you're looking for. 662-889-2528. Can't wait to see you on October 2nd.
Inco artists that would come out and perform, and always they would have a beautiful hibiscus-looking flower. And they did the same thing when the Spaniards went to Germany and other countries. You know, that was one of the things he did very well, I think, was, you know, the Spanish culture.
Despite other
but
problems.
But despite all the other bad things, he was terrible. Yeah, he was absolutely brutal.
We won't put that on the table appreciated
But he seemed
culture.
To love flamenco art, culture, and red flowers. So when I saw that this morning, I'm like, Thank you, man, that's so fresh on my mind, and it's beautiful.
Well, it's one of the things about hibiscus. I've been on this now for weeks, and I can't seem to slow down or stop. They're just all over me, and there's one for every occasion. And I do believe that sometimes the classic tropical big flower, and I do like the doubles. I realize that some people really prefer the single-flowered hibiscus, but I've always liked these that are a little bit more eccentric,
perhaps. When you say
double,
though, I wanted to ask, because mine throw out this one beautiful flower. It doesn't last terribly long.
Well, and the flower itself does not have all this stuff in the middle.
Right. It's fairly hollow.
You can see its nose. That's where the pollen and whatnot is.
Gotcha.
That stands out. That's a single flower. Same thing's true in, for instance, Sasanquas are about to start blooming, and I've been writing about them. We think of Sasanquas as being a single or semi-double flower. That's because you can see, for example, all their yellow stamens in the center. If you're looking at the Garden Mama newsletter this week, or if you look at the supertalk.tv, you'll see some of that. That's a single flower or a semi-double, depending on how the petals are arranged. This one, because you can't see that at all, is a double flower, and oftentimes camellias, sometimes Sasanquas, but oftentimes camellias are that way. And I don't know, they're not necessarily more exotic. They protect their pollen, and the pollinators do have a little bit more work to do, perhaps, to get into some of them. But it is still just something that we as human beings get to appreciate and enjoy and have fun with, because they're so pretty. No doubt about all of that. You've been digging deep into Francisco Franco. I've been digging deep into Darmok and Jalad on the ocean. I fell into the Star Trek world this week, and between trying to understand other languages and trying to understand how some people do speak in metaphor and some people do speak in illustration, it was a really good way to get there, to go through Shaka when the walls fell and that kind of fun stuff. But on a perhaps more horticultural note, I'm going to tell you right now, my friends, this is in fact hummingbird migration moment. If you haven't had an opportunity to have any time spent with them yet, hang up some feeders or go to see your neighbors or whatever you need to do, because they're out and about. They're heading into the south now. And, of course, this is the natural part of their change in the world. They have to get themselves south. These particular species do. Ruby-throated, and I think there's about a dozen of them. Ken Hackman will call and tell me if I'm wrong, that migrate, but some migrate in other parts of the country, too. Primarily, not that we don't ever see them here, but they have a more active pattern. That's why when you see the maps, it looks like there are huge flocks of hummingbirds going, you know, in a long line down the Mississippi River, or sometimes from even farther east. But they actually are solitary migrators. And I just think, I don't know about that. I mean, I know it's true. That's how they've been recorded and how they've been observed all this time. But I just think that by now they'd have figured out that there's some of them that know a little bit more than others. But that does sort of explain why sometimes we have hummingbirds of the migrating species that do not migrate. People have said, oh, they must be sick or they're ill or something. No, they just may not know where they're going. They may not have the map. They may not have been imprinted with that from their ancestors. It's hard to know because they're solitary, and I'm sure they follow one another to some extent, but not much. That on that subject, yes, single-flowered with large ability, easy ability for the hummingbirds to get their snouts in there is really important. That's why cypress vine is such a logical end of summer flower. Yes, 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 you have to contain it. It is one that will reseed rampantly, and I do love that quality about it, but it's not one you want to put necessarily, you know, where it can take over the whole space unless that's what you want it to do. But it's a wonderful hummingbird plant. It's another that we use a little bit less nitrogen on until it really needs it. And then when we boost it up, say, at midsummer with a little bit of a nitrogen fertilizer, that just gives it more leaves and then more flowers at about this time of the year. Fertilizer is oftentimes something that we have to sort of time, and it doesn't work the same way. For example, if you fed that cypress vine in December, in most parts of the South, the water that falls from the sky would take it away before it could ever be used by the plants, because the seeds at that point are dormant. The little plants are too, for the most part. Just an interesting way to consider all that stuff and look at it. Another thing you'll see at Supertalk this morning on supertalk.tv or in the video stream on your television. Thank you very much for watching. Appreciate that. You'll also see stippling. There's a leaf that was particularly well stippled here, so I took a photo of it. And I think that we need to expand our idea. People see a little stippling oftentimes on an eggplant, and they go, well, you know, it's a flea beetle or it's whatever it is. That's true. But there are 6 or 7 very common late summer insects, most of whom are tiny, that could be feeding on that particular leaf. And so you need to look around. One approach that I have seen people take when they're growing vegetables, for example, is to just take soapy water and wipe the leaves even before you see the stippling, because they know it's coming. And the only issue with the stippling is that it does weaken the plant to a certain extent. It doesn't, you know, usually kill it, but it will if you leave it alone entirely, but it does weaken the plant. Anything that takes away from the plant's ability to photosynthesize and grow at a steady, thrifty pace does cause it problems. And so that's what stippling is all about, is to make sure that you're taking care of it to the extent that you can in actively growing plants. Now, what does that say? I have to go back to Japanese maples and our friends the dogwoods. They will get stippled, but they're already on their way into dropping their leaves. You can tell that too. So that in that case, you just want to clean up after the leaves fall. You don't necessarily want to treat the tree at this point. Okay, that's a different approach to things. Oh, this, I can't stop this. The carrion flowers, the stapeliads. I don't know how in the world this turned out to be such a fine year for them, but y'all keep sending me the pictures of them, and I put forward a picture of one of mine this morning. They're so beautiful. This one is from Lada. It's one of the memorial plants that we have here that's just so beautiful, and it blooms, and each time we look around, there's another bud on it. It's just so pretty and a really, really good way to appreciate our dear friend and also that beautiful flower. And, yeah, it's carrion flower. That's why it's stapeliads. Now, I don't know how to tell y'all this, but we have an invader. Yep, we do. We talk about Florida all the time in terms of the species that have gotten away from there. I believe it was last week that the person who is on social media, I think his name is Himmel, who is deeply involved in both the python and the iguana removal, has gotten a lot of attention. I don't think he can help with this, though. The Sargasso Sea has traditionally been the place that we associate with sargassum, that is to say, with the beginnings of the brown seaweed that really can cause some problems in anything that shades below it, you know, like this stuff does, because it's so thick. It can also interfere with commerce and whatnot. The blooms of it really are bad on the ecosystem in that area. And that, of course, has a ripple effect across things. Well, now it's escaped from the Sargasso Sea. I think it's always been escaped a little bit, but now it's a bigger problem and has formed what Florida Atlantic University calls the Great Atlantic Sargassum Belt. That does not sound like fun at all. These are both results of natural things like the Amazon River that flows into the ocean, okay, but it's also climate events that are not necessarily controllable, However, the nutrient runoff that we talk about every year with the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico is also a factor in this particular problem. So the folks from Florida Atlantic's Harbor Branch Oceanic, I knew I wasn't going to say that right, Oceanographic Institute, are tracing four decades of studies in a review of all this data. It's not good. It's not good. It does play an important role in the ecosystem, but where it is too much rapidly growing, it changes other things, and that's very difficult for that environment, for that particular ecosystem to adapt to. So they're working on that there at Florida Atlantic. They're always working on something, and it seems to me like if your interest is in either marine biology or invasive species, you might want to think about going there for some more education as well as some more knowledge. We've long known they're always, you know, our tater vine that so many people like is verboten there, forbidden. So just like the tallow trees, they have done so much damage that they are just not allowed to be there. If you see it, you should take it down. And I agree with that even as far north as we are, because it's a bigger deal as it increases in its capacity to take over spaces. It's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. You're looking at some of that cypress vine, and why is it called cypress vine? It's a red-flowered, star-flowered thing. Well, probably because the way the leaves are, they are so fine-textured that they could be, if you squint, they could be a form of a conifer or a form of a cypress leaf. They have that. They look a little bit like that anyway. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. I think that's probably what they're referring to in that case. Now, I have to turn that off. I've got too many things on over here, Lance.
It happens, you know.
It does happen.
I get called every blue moon with it.
I was trying to find my picture so I could explain about the hibiscus that you eat in the tea. This has all been on my mind. This is it's also called Jamaican sorrel. So if you go, for example, to a farmer's market or to a boutique or a fancy, you know, pastry shop or something, and you find things that it says it has Jamaican sorrel in it, that's actually the common name of this particular hibiscus. It's the hibiscus that is in hibiscus tea, hibiscus jellies, you know, all sorts of things. And it is a beautiful plant, as well as being really very important to commerce. This particular one, of course, is not as commonly grown because the red clusters of seeds are what we're actually looking for in it. And the flowers are a little bit smaller than some of the other hibiscus flowers. But there are many, many, many of them, and once they all turn into the seed heads, it's a beautiful stand in the garden, and certainly very useful at that point, too. So check it out. If you haven't ever seen Sabdarifa, that's the hibiscus that's called Jamaican sorrel, check it out. You'll find it in garden centers and certainly be able to check it out online someplace. I've been talking about the Ruellias, and so this week in the newsletter I wanted to feature the one that I like because it reseeds so well. You may have had, there's a couple of red salvias that reseed at a small plant, maybe 18 inches tall. Those are terrific. This Ruellia will do the same thing, but it'll do it in a little bit less sunlight. So if you have a dappled area, you can probably get it to bloom there just like you would the other Ruellias. It's a red one, though. It's called Ragin' Cajun. It's another of the developments from the folks at DuPont Nursery. If you have enjoyed Cajun hibiscus, those are your folks. This is another one of their plants. They have a lot of them. This particular one in Zone 8 will reseed pretty consistently. Pretty consistently, I'm happy to say. Now, when we talk about the fall garden, we've been talking about planting greens. We've been talking about taking care of the stuff that's still there. And I heard from someone this week said, well, the tomato plants were great, but the stink bugs just showed up, and now it's going to be a loss. I hate that. But you do have to watch out for them at the end of summer. They are definitely going to be a problem. If you didn't see them in July, you will certainly see them in August and September. The stink bugs are with us all the time, and the warmer the weather stays, the longer they're able to continue to be a problem in the garden. Like many other insects, they take advantage of us. If they only need If they only need 8 days to reproduce, for example, and we have 8 warm days, it's going to work better for them than it would have in another environment. That is for sure. I do have another bit of information for you today about they're trying to make another kind of photosynthesis. You know, you think we need that? Well, of course we do. I want to talk about what's going on out there, what asters are blooming, and what aster that might be that you see on the side of the road, too. When I'm talking about fall asters, I'm talking about the little flower with the purple daisy-looking thing. Sometimes they're white, but that's not usually what we see at first. They age out to white a lot of the time, but they're purple, and sometimes it's a little, maybe it's a bush on the side of the road that's 3 feet tall or something, or if it's been mowed over. I've talked to you about this plant before, that in my driveway I just mow it and it still goes ahead and blooms because it's determined to bloom, but it blooms at about 4 inches tall rather than at 2 feet. So that particular one is probably the more common one, called the aromatic aster. It does have a certain scent to it. This is not something we're going to make perfume out of necessarily, but it is, they're really valuable for the pollinators, and it is one that is the toughest in the Southeast. There are some others, though, because aster is a part of that Compositae family, the daisy family. It's a big, huge family of plants, and there are several that bloom. If you sought them out and planted all of these, you would probably have asters past Thanksgiving in most parts of the Southeast. There's late purples, and there's even possibly Elliott's aster. I love Elliott's aster because it'll grow in the wetlands, and it's a pretty plant as well as lovely, lovely flowers. But it is indeed, it's important to know what they are. It's also important to know really which one you're growing, because some of them can tolerate more attention from you than others. The Elliott's, for example, would much better rather be left alone. Laura's in Florida. She wants to grow ranunculus in central Mississippi. I'm telling you, go for it. Plant some more, plant them again. They don't take a terribly long time. If you planted them today, if you have bulbs in your hand and you planted ranunculus here in the beginning part of September, I really believe you could be picking them by Thanksgiving. It's going to take 8 weeks. It might take 10, just depends on the weather, but you're going to get real close if you don't get there. Okay. So I like that. I love ranunculus. You can plant them again in the spring too, so buy plenty. Well, thank you for that, sir. We're going to step out of here. Timba at rest.
I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least 3 written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional, because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board.
Friday nights just got.
All right, now, if you have not planted any onions recently, now's the time to start thinking about it. You know, that's another one of those things that we can really do well with in the South that other folks have to, I don't know, struggle a little bit, only grow the big bulbs. We can grow green everything. We can grow literally both kinds of shallots. We can grow green onions from sets. We can grow from seed if you have the patience. I don't, but you might. There's a whole lot of different ways to do things, and I encourage you to explore all of them. Good question from Sue in Lucedale. Y'all know that's where my grandmother's from. My beautiful large pot of poinsettias were covered in white flies. I have sprayed them. I have used neem. I finally just cut them down. Any advice for the future? Well, first of all, yes. First of all, that it's a tough thing when those white flies really take over something like a poinsettia, because there's a lot of good healthy growth on there, and they love it, and they will get started and just stay there. So I understand what happened. Happens in gardenias sometimes too. Can be a real problem for us as gardeners trying to get rid of them on another plant when we have to realize where they're living. So in this case, they were living there and now they're gone. So that's the good news. Really just fertilize and water that plant. You may or may not get enough growth on it to get any reddening this year, but if not, it'll continue to grow as a lovely houseplant, and then next year it'll start into its cycle. What we're looking at in poinsettias, of course, is that as the day length, as the percentage of time in the 24 hours that there is sunlight gets shorter, they are triggered to flower. So as in nature, they bloom, for example, in Mexico City, they bloom in January. But because we always want things when we want them, we have developed an entire industry to bring poinsettias into flower, into red bract, and then be able to be delivered to you between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's a fancy process, and it's one that involves bringing that shorter time of sunlight to them beginning in September. So since we got to grow this plant on for Sue, we're not going to be able to do that this time. And because Paul the poinsettia is almost 5 feet tall now, even though I cut it way back, he's had a big haircut this year, I still don't have any place to put this plant that's big enough to actually put it in the dark every night. So it also will be red when it's red, which has generally the last couple of years has been January. So that's my answer on that one. Take care of it, water it, fertilize it, and yeah, at the first sign of white flies on anything in the area, make sure you spray the poinsettia too, because it's not going to be alone. It will be only one more of those things.
What was your comment about Lucedale? You said you had people from there?
Yeah, my grandmother's from there.
My grandfather, that neck of the woods, we may be related.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. There were seven of them, so related to a lot of people. I have cousins all over the place.
They settled up in McGee eventually, but I love that neck of the woods.
Well, my grandmother married one of the men from that worked on the railroad with her brothers. And that's how they all found their wives and their husbands.
Nice. It's kind of like some tombstone.
Well, you kind of had to go through the thing. You know, you couldn't actually just date her. You had to meet her brother first.
You had to meet everybody, and they
exactly.
had to agree.
They all had to agree.
Yeah, we're
going to
let this guy in.
You know, so it turned out well for me. So let's see. What's Bill up to today? Just tuned in, had a discussion with my wife this morning about leaf leg steak bugs, okay, that are destroying our tomatoes. Any suggestions? Well, I'm thinking he's talking about the ones that have feet. In other words, they're sitting on there, and yes, they can do some trouble. They're not a big problem, but this is one of those places where literally brushing them off the plant is more successful than anything you would try to spray them with. Take a bucket with you and just literally shake the plant and sweep them into it and get them out of there. Then, if you want to spray with a general purpose insecticide intended for leaf-footed bugs and anything else, you can do that. But you'll get a faster result the same way you would for the stink bugs. Go out, shake the plant, let them fall into something, and get them out of there physically before you begin trying to take care of them with a spray. White flies, we can't do that so much. White flies, you know, they fly. They're going to be there. But particularly, for example, in early morning, our friends, the beetle family in general are not early risers. So whether it's Mexican bean beetles on your bush beans, or whether it's one of these other characters that can cause you such a problem as stink bugs can, the morning time is the time to try and get hold of them. get to them before they can get to your plants. And then think about using something else. Good morning, Paula. Thank you much. I love that smile. That's a great emoji. I got to find that one. That's cute. Yeah, you know what? There's a whole lot of horticulture in Loosedale today as well, Lance. Folks grow a lot of plants there. The territory there just kind of rolls on over into lower Alabama where a lot of the best growers are, and it's an area that is very beloved by horticulture folks all over the country.
We have that corridor, you know, from Hattiesburg down to Mobile, Highway 98.
Yeah.
And that stretch from Loosedale, what, to Simis or Sims, however they say
it? Sims, yeah.
You get over there, you can
I have to laugh. Yeah. That, I don't think it's there anymore. That was the most famous speed trap.
That's what I was going to say. You had to be careful coming through there. Probably still do. It's been a while since I vacated down there.
But,
man, that place, you had to be careful. But all you had beautiful scenery. There's always a garden shop or
just
plant
lovely.
Stores
yes,
everywhere.
So much going on.
Tomatoes.
Always,
yeah,
always.
I love it. And then you'd hit that little bridge, I guess, as you get close to USA, the South Alabama.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I love that area. And it's always been like growing heaven.
Oh, it is.
I've heard,
it
I've
is.
Never seen the big it farms, is. But when you hit that, I guess it's as you're coming close to Sims, you hit a hill or something, you can kind of see.
That whole area.
Yeah, man, it's mm-hmm. that's impressive.
It's just
and it's
beautiful.
All like, you know, potted plant type
yep.
stuff.
Yep, yeah. They grow azaleas, they grow ground covers, they grow every kind of shrub, they grow all sorts of stuff. And then there are some there who grow a bunch of natives as well. So it's a bustling, thriving place. And I would be remiss. I can hear one of my friends saying, okay, tell them about the flea market. I think it's still there. Somebody told me they were there this summer at Schlumberger down there. You go down there, there's this gigantic flea market where there's other weird plants, particularly. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff there.
Do they have Venus flytraps?
Probably, yeah, all that sort of stuff.
I'm telling you, I really want a Venus flytrap just to, like, you know, hopefully it's like the Rocky Horror Picture Show thing. You know, it grows into this beast. And
you would like Audrey in your living room.
Yeah,
yes,
have a buddy, you know. Now, can you grow them here, though? I mean, if I keep it.
Not
like
to
an
that
orchid?
Extent, no. But yes, you can absolutely grow. You can absolutely grow carnivorous plants here, yes.
There's enough flies for them to eat.
We certainly appreciate their efforts, too. Paula from Denville, red cypress vine. Ooh, she wants to plant some. Okay, she wants to know if it's easily controlled. The answer is no. But if you give it a space, or if you grow it in a big pot, so that then when it recedes right there. You just don't want it to be something, you know, that's the same thing that I've said about the purple ruellia. You don't want to put it in a good, beautiful soil in a flower bed, or it's going to march right across there and take things over. Cypress vine will literally come up in the same way that garlic does, but it's much more aggressive. It will come up everywhere. It'll be in the flower pots. It'll be in the ground. It'll, you know, come up in the sidewalk. But if you have it, if you grow it in a large container with, you know, a trellis in it to provide a nice height for it to grow to, you can contain it to that, for sure. That's absolutely true. Okay, here's a good one. I'm sorry, I'm trying to see who this is, but I don't.
Let's see.
Karen, maybe? Let's see. I don't know. Anyway, this is something that we all face at one point or another. If we plant trees and if they grow, they eventually age out. Might be our grandchildren that, you know, have to deal with that oak tree, but, you know, there's always a limited lifespan. It may be long, but it's still not forever. They had to cut down a very old, very, very, very old tree. There were tears involved, and there's about 30 feet of the massive trunk left. This is one of my joys, is that when a tree is topped and not cut all the way down, because I love that. He would like to plant a vine to honor the tree, and he wants some suggestion that will provide color all summer. Also want it to come back. Okay, there's a couple of choices. The first one is autumn clematis, and it's not going to bloom all summer, but it's going to bloom at this time of the year in a very dramatic way. There's also trumpet vine. And there's also scarlet vine. There's that same campsis as well. You know, there's two different ones, bignonias and campsis. But they're both vigorous vines that can do a good job in that space. But, again, they're only going to bloom the first half of the summer. So this is a case where you might need You might want to put that cypress vine there because it will be there and it will compete with everything else that you plant there, but it will continue and will provide flowers through the summer. So there's not any one vine that will bloom all the way through that I'm aware of, as well as a couple of them working together could do. So I would suggest, if it was me thinking about it, I would go with the trumpet vine because it's going to bloom spring into summer, and then autumn clematis because it's going to bloom summer into fall. Those would be my choices. Could be really pretty. And I commend you for leaving the 30 feet of trunk. You'll also find that if there are woodpeckers in your area, they will make it a home, and it will be a wonderful, very, very loud and vivid place in your garden. It'll be beautiful. And this, of course, is the one time that I'll tell you that it's okay to put something in there and hang stuff on that trunk. If you have a tree trunk, please don't put nails in it to hang up a hammock. But if you've got a 30-foot trunk, that's a different story. You might want to hang a nice sign on there, something with the history of the plant. Be kind of fun. Well, as you may have anticipated, Lance, I know that you're literally are knee-deep in football right at this moment in time. Today is National Tailgating Day.
Yay. Can you imagine the bouquets and the centerpieces
that
are going to be
goodness.
Donning all of these tailgate festivals?
Every color, all the team. It's just wonderful, wonderful stuff. Now, in that regard, it is also Bacon Day. So I'm thinking that there's got to be some connection here. There's got to be any
bacon,
number of
bacon,
things we
wrap
can wrap
jalapeno.
Up in bacon.
I mean, a jalapeno wrap bacon. My brain isn't right. You got me on food now. I'm thinking, I'm missing the tailgate. Oh, goodness. And bacon?
Bacon
is love.
And bacon. It's a delight. And I tell you what, one of the best things for starting that early morning part of the tailgate, and frankly, the mid-afternoon pick-me-up isn't going to hurt my feelings either. I got to tell you, I'm so impressed with y'all and with this beautiful, beautiful Garden Mama Blend coffee. I have it right here.
No, I got the
pick. It's in here.
Yeah,
isn't this beautiful? This is Isabella Stewart Gardner, a famous gardener. This is from her garden that says, "My garden is riotous, unholy, deliriously glorious. I wish you were here." And since it has my coffee in it, it's even better. Now, that's a garden, I think it's in Alabama, that was a gift for me. But you can get Garden Mama Blend coffee from me right here, right now.
That's right.
So,
and
yourself,
I can vouch for it.
I know. I'm
it's
so
delicious.
Happy. You know, he pushed us, and we're happy to do this. We will be delivering on September 20th, so if you want to send me an email, order it that way. But you can get right on to the opportunity to order it straight away, and we'll mail it to you before that.
Well, there's a Wonka-esque quality to it, I must say, because the moment I drank all of the Garden Mama blend, I became much better looking, and I have a much better, my green thumb. It's extremely green now. So
and it's National Beard Day, and your beard grew. So
yeah, my beard's growing in. Goodness, you got to get you some of this stuff.
It's really the best part about this, y'all, is honestly, this is small batch. This is custom brewed. This is a family operation. And if you've ever had that opportunity to be around coffee beans when they're roasting, I can tell you right now, it's just the best way in the world to get there.
Man.
It's just a delightful way to start your day. So, join me.
It smells, when you open that and you smell it too, it smells so fresh.
It
and
is.
It's not to take away from other coffees out
yes,
there.
Yes, it is to take away from
but
other coffees.
But I have to brag on you. It really does make a huge difference in that, the smell, the aroma. When you first open the bag, you're like, oh, man, this is golden.
Isn't it fun?
Yeah,
and that's because it's a Guatemalan and Colombian Supremo blend. It's been we tasted a lot of coffee. That's what these folks do. That's my family. That's what they do. They roast for the place, for the person, for the establishment, for the event. They do all of that. It's custom. And that's why it's so delicious and so wonderful.
Well, and we have a question here from Paula in Dentville, and she's asking
I'm going to send her another. This is our only opportunity right now is through PayPal.
Yeah.
But we will have the opportunity down the way for some more options. And, yes, I will have it on the 20th at the event in Ridgeland. What time of year should I plant those vines? Plant them this fall, by all means. Okay. There's an opportunity for us to step away from here, But we're going to be back in just a moment. Stick around. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Propane gas is used in many commercial establishments, such as hotels, motels, restaurants, hospitals, and is used in much the same way as it is in residential. It is used for heating, cooling, lighting, and industrial applications such as forklifts and construction. Propane. Energy for everyone. Visit propane.com. That's propane.com.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
Northwestern University, my friends, may have solved one of our bigger problems. How is that possible? Well, you know, I don't know if you've had this experience. I've been trying to recycle stuff for more years than I would like to remember, and there's never been a good situation, good system for it. Individually, municipally, statewide, whatever it is, you know, your county or anything else. And part of that reason is because of the separation. We have so many kinds of plastic that anything that might have been recyclable is weighed down by stuff that is not. And indeed, that all has to be sorted, and that in turn makes it financially, quite honestly, unfeasible. So the cartoon is that the truck comes down the street and it's got a panel for paper and a panel for glass and a panel for plastic. And when the panels are all open, it's all just one big bin and everybody throws everything in there together. That's not necessarily the case, but from a perspective of trying to manage all this stuff that we generate, that we create, you know, is very, very difficult to figure out. So I'm happy. Anytime they're working on stuff, it makes me happy. But Northwestern has come up with a new catalyst, and it's nickel-based. It's something that we actually have a lot of. This is not, you know, something we have to harvest from Jupiter or something. This is a catalyst that could transform the way that we do this. The issue is the polyolefin plastics. Those are the ones that don't recycle and they're hard to separate out. This stuff grabs that and pulls it away, takes it, and that's a big step. So if they can get this to work efficiently, it's working effectively. So if we can get it to work efficiently, this would be a huge step forward in changing this away. When the catalyst breaks it down, the low-value solid plastics, which are the ones that is the problem, we have a lot of that, and it's not
the
recyclable.
Forever particle.
Exactly, that stuff. This is actually working in that one that to undo the fact that they're not recyclable. It can turn into oil, into lubricants, and even into candles.
Hey, so I was...
I'm there.
Melody Golding, one of the great Mississippi artists and photographers,
yes,
and writers. We had her on about a week ago, and she has a display and an exhibit of photography for Katrina, where she went down.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously,
mm-hmm,
we're honoring the anniversary there. And so I went down to the two museums, which is a phenomenal setup, folks. If you haven't visited, very, very nice.
Please do, yes.
Very fortunate to have museums as nice as that. But Her exhibit on Katrina, the photography, second floor of the Civil Rights Museum. It is free if you want to go see that, and it is moving. But in tandem to what you're talking about, seeing all the stuff, all yeah. of the things that the piles and the debris, and it breaks your heart. But at the same time, you know, you see the resilience in people, and this kind of parlays to what you're saying. Keep continually finding ways to do mm-hmm. something better, even. Maybe in the face of a disaster or
well,
being
yeah,
challenged.
We were told early on that we just had to ban PVCs entirely because they couldn't be recycled and they would just pile up, and they do. But being able to actually get some of that to fit into the stream of recycling could change a lot of things.
Yeah, that's really cool stuff.
You can't really stop anybody from making anything, I don't think. You just have to make better uses for it
right.
and better ways to deal with it.
I was really
it.
Worried about it. You know, you think of those things. I watched a video, it must have been a year or so ago, of like a husband and wife and a couple kids, and it looked like they were somewhere in like Malaysia, out in the mountains, and they were receiving on the backs of trucks basically Walmart bags, the little garbage bags. And they'd take them and melt them down and then turn them into pots.
What happens
to stuff. So lowbrow,
but
man, it was
so many. Well, and you know, I hate to say this because I do have great affection for a lot of things in New York City, but for years, the boroughs there didn't have any disposal. They just put stuff on barges and sent it out to some other country or out into the ocean to be dumped. A lot of that stuff has changed, fortunately, but it doesn't. The plastics that were not recyclable haven't changed. They find them when they, you know, go out into the oceans now. It's not the microbead. This is an entirely different set. But anyway, so it's a good step forward to have something that can break some of these things down, particularly what we've been considering the unrecyclables. Talk about reclaimed and restored and recycled. This is just beautiful. This cast iron bench, our friends with their Arkansas farm. This is so, I mean, this. If you've ever seen cast iron turned into art, and I hope you have. If you haven't, go look some up. It's beautiful. Can make it into, obviously, vines and trees and corn stalks and all this sort of thing. But this has been turned into the really and truly adorable, the sowing, the cultivation, the cutting, and the gathering seasons are in these four panels in this really beautiful bench, which has a really spectacular presence in the garden. It's just beautiful. But, yeah, I'm sure it was had to be reclaimed. That's not something that people were – it wasn't popular for a while. We who like to go back and reclaim that old stuff say, well, of course, it always had a use. You can sit on it, you know. Why'd they get rid of that? Well, you don't know, but people do. People change their taste. People change what they can haul around. One of the reasons I have cast iron pans is because nobody else could pick them up. You know what I mean? They could have, but they didn't want to. So it's just one of those pieces of the puzzle. Also, looking today, I don't know if I want to tell you this or not, but it is coming up on the blood corn moon. This is not just the corn moon, the harvest moon. We associate that, of course, with the native populations here in America and their corn harvest, but we also associate it with Sukkot and the traditional harvest times, you know, everywhere. But this one is also at the time of an eclipse, which is going to turn around and make it look red. So we have it coming up, is it the 7th, I think, the 8th, 7th and 8th. So it's going to be beautiful, and I look forward to lots of – I have some really insomniac friends that take beautiful pictures while I'm asleep. I look forward to that. Oh, that's pretty. That's really pretty. Beautiful, beautiful. Lovely pots. I really like that kind of this is a particular method of looking at things where we have a ridge on the outside of the pot, but it's small enough that it actually looks like lines, maybe a music staff, maybe, you know, a notebook, that kind of stuff. Very small, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful lines in that pot. And I do like the shape. I like a pot that's wide at top and not necessarily narrow at the bottom, but that slopes gently so that you have a nice big soil component and you still have that nice gentle curved shape. That's really attractive. I'm not sure who this is, but I know that they're beautiful. Really lovely from an estate sale. Very cool. Lovely, lovely, lovely. That's another piece of this puzzle, you know. One person's trash is another person's treasure is not just an expression.
Don't tell my dad that. It's gracious.
Well, he likes stuff.
Oh, he loves everybody's stuff. If it's, especially if it's the end of a driveway and it's right before the garbage truck comes. Yeah, that's
good stuff.
I'd love to go by his house. Younger, he's gotten to where he's not as bad now at 79, but he's still, if he sees something he can't live without, he's going to grab it.
He'll call you.
Yeah, but it was always a treat to come home and find what he had found in the neighborhood. And I'm like, Dad, goodness, Chris.
Well, you know, I mean.
Got to go back and
Nathan,
get the truck and go down
there
and get it. That's
Nathan. Oh, in Smith County, he did get a new phone number, so that's how come I didn't recognize who that was. Those pots are just beautiful. Thank you, Nathan. You know, it's really funny, too. We have we've heard about people going dumpster diving for a long time, but we've got the number one, the absolute. People consult him from all over the world. You know, our own Scary Gary can literally he can drop a fishing line in a dumpster and come up with $1 million, y'all. I'm telling you. He knows I'm talking about him. I can't talk about dumpsters without talking about him. Well, listen now, we got to step away. We got a lot to do in the next hour. All your phone calls, all your texts, we'll be right here. Stick around. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Pine Grove Behavioral Health and Addiction Services, located in Hattiesburg, is one of the nation's most comprehensive treatment campuses. Pine Grove provides the highest quality mental health care and addiction treatment for children, adolescents, and adults. Pine Grove offers many levels of care, including inpatient and outpatient treatment for children and adolescents. If you have any questions, please call 1-888-574-HOPE and visit pinegrovetreatment.com.
We've sent that rip.
Our both of us are very concerned about gripeweed and its ability to take over the nation. So I'm here to tell you, even the landscapers are worried about it. So that's really good news. Thank you very, very much, Paul. Appreciate you. If you have another way you want to send us a coffee order, just let me know. I'll figure it out. So,
ooh, taking John. COD and Western Union.
That's right. And in on the 20th, I'll physically be there with coffee. But anyway, that's the fest. That's the Magnolia Garden Fest, of course, in Ridgeland. I haven't mentioned it today appropriately, and I should, because it is, in fact, going to be a fantastic event. In Ridgeland at the Renaissance, and it is outdoors. It is going to be a beautiful event, great speakers, great opportunities, and really some fun time. Just there's something about the community of gardeners that is a nicer place to be than just about anywhere else you can be. Tailgates notwithstanding, I do love a tailgate, but having the opportunity to go and hang out with gardeners, maybe we need to have a tailgate.
Yeah, a gardening tailgate.
Let me think about that. Yeah, let me work on that one. Let's see. John in Tennessee, how can I tell when the watermelon is ripe? Well, it's the watermelon will pretty much tell you, because the stem end of it will no longer be as bright green. It's not, you don't wait until it goes brown. You know how you buy the watermelon at the grocery store, and if it has any stem left on it, it's very browned out. You don't wait that long, but you wait for it to begin to start to change. There are some varieties that when you turn them, you'll see that they've begun to get yellow on one side. That's usually a good sign. And of course, there's the good old thump test. When you thump them and they ring hollow, it's getting riper. It's riper if it's hollow than the one next to it that is not. I think those are my best ways. Those are my best ways to tell you. And let's see. JR's in Starkville. Okay, wanting to put plastic over part of the garden to kill some weeds and whatnot. What color should I use and how long to leave it on? I wish this was June. because you could get such good results through July and August and September. But Starkville is, you know, Starkville is a good place to do this process called solarization with clear plastic. It increases the greenhouse effect. The sunlight hits the clear plastic. The clear plastic is right there on top of the weeds that you're trying to kill, and the whole thing multiplies the effect. Okay, that's how we do it. And it can take 8 or 10 weeks, depending on what the weeds are. So you may want to do this with clear plastic now. If you don't get the results that you're hoping for, then just leave it on there. Or even if at that point, if it's about halfway gone, I wouldn't have any problem putting some black plastic over it just to keep the rain off of it through the winter. But you want to do this with clear plastic, and here's why. You're going to get better results from the sunlight that is pouring in on that plastic, and it doubles the effect, if not triples it, in terms of the depth that the seeds of the weeds can be killed, as well as the weeds on top of the ground. But it's also true that we have the opportunity at that point to give a different look at things. For example, it's going to still be, if we use black plastic, I should say, it changes everything because it creates a non-photosynthetic environment, but it doesn't really do anything to take out the weeds except by suppression, physical suppression of their light. So it works better if you can do it with clear plastic, 6 mil, the thick stuff, but it also works better in the summertime than it will in the fall. I'm not going to discourage you there because it certainly will be helpful. Okay? Okay. Some of the things that we do that for, some of the reasons that we put out some kind of cover, something or another. I was reading an article, in fact, talking with this same landscaper about the gripeweed. The idea is, and Alan Owings and the folks from they really have a sea of it to deal with. Alan Owings is advising that instead of that traditional pre-emerge that we would do maybe in February, we're going to do this in May for gripeweed. I'm not sure if gripeweed isn't up already by then, so maybe February and then repeat it in May. But if you can get, I like the Preen products, and the really more powerful of the Preen products are the ones that they tell me will take care of the gripeweed. I had fairly good success using the organic Preen product, but I had already ripped all of it out of the bed, so it was just having to suppress whatever seeds were there underground. And I think it's a really good process. Kill the weeds and then come back with a pre-emerge if you possibly can and take care of anything else that might come up from seed. Now, obviously, if you're intending to grow from seed, that doesn't work. But that's how we do that. One of the questions that I have had a lot of recently is how to do some things that will be a slightly more permanent solution to stuff. And Chris in Summit has a good one. He tells me is a bacterial tomato wilt out of the garden soil. No, there's not really any way to get rid of it. There's nothing to apply to it. You pretty much have to fumigate that when that's the issue. You may have seen in the western part of the United States, they grow strawberries on really high mounds that are black plastic covered. The whole field is just an ocean of black plastic. And part of the reason that they did that for so long is because it was better for them to fumigate things like this bacteria that he's talking about. They would cover it all up, fumigate the entire place, basically wipe out everything. I'm not in favor of this at all, but that's how they did it. And then they came back in and planted strawberries on top of those mounds. It is a big problem. You will find people who sterilize their soil after this has happened. You'll find people who completely replace it by putting it in other places that they don't care about so much. But it's difficult, and you will lose every plant to it. Once any kind of wilt, whether it's late blight or a bacterial wilt, so there are a couple of others that can absolutely run right through and take out everything. So I would replace the soil, maybe go to growing in containers for a few years with fresh soil. And you do have to swap that soil because it's tomatoes. But or just start a new bed and move from one end of it to the other over the next couple of years. The soil itself would have to be sterilized in order to be really usable again, and it's difficult to do that. Yes, people do. I've seen people sterilize soil on basically what looked like big baking sheets on an outdoor, you know, those brick kind of barbecue pits outdoors. You know, they have the big long space where you can like put a whole salmon, you know, or put large pieces of food to cook. That's one of the places I've seen people do that. I wouldn't have wanted to go back and eat anything cooked there probably for a while afterwards, but I have seen people do that. Soil sterilization is a very tough thing to do. It is why we generally buy a bag of, for example, Coast of Maine seed starting soil. Had great success with that. Had really great success. And he brought in, Chris says he brought in this disease in the containers with outside soil. Yeah, that can happen too. That's how I got nut grass in my garden a couple of times. It was not sprouted at the time that I brought in the plant that had it in their soil. So it's terrible. I hear you. That's one reason why when you go to a commercial grower, most of the time, and some people who just have a greenhouse will do this, you'll have a little section that's absolutely sequestered so that you put things there first before you expose them to the rest of your planting or the rest of your plants in containers or the rest of your greenhouse or whatever it is. And I think that's probably a really good idea. We should probably all do that a little bit more than we do. I'm famous. As soon as the parsley sprouts, I'm going and sticking that plant out in something else. I might ought to leave it alone for a little while, make sure it's doing okay. Anywho, something else to think about today. I am very, very... I don't want to always be looking ahead. And I got to tell you, the candelabra trees that are in bloom now are just magnificent. Talked about the asters coming into bloom. They're just magnificent. But if you're shopping, you're going to a garden center, and you're looking at a tree, you're looking at a shrub, look at sasanquas. They are in good supply across the South at this time of year because they're just about to begin blooming. The very earliest ones, of course, have already. But this is one of those plants that has come into its own in the last 30 or 40 years, been around forever. You understand people were growing these things in the 14th century. But they entered the Western world in the early 20th century, and it's really something that when you think about it, these were the first camellias that Westerners knew about. They're native to Japan. The term Sankara, which is what they're called there, actually means plum-flowered tea. And it is, in fact, a tea plant. It's, you know, we all know about that. But when we started getting the better opportunities to put them in just as an ornamental, well, it really took off. And so we have the benefit of centuries of cultivation as an ornamental plant, as well as the very most recent research into sasanquas to put them into our own gardens. I find they do beautifully with morning sun, afternoon shade, but they can also be in a dappled situation all day long. For example, if you have a pine grove and you're trying to put some trees at the edges of it, sasanqua is a good tree to bring down, step down from those really tall pines down into something that's maybe 20 feet at the most. There's also smaller ones. I've got one in a container that's just about to bust open into bloom, and it is one of my very favorites because it does bloom when other things are not so happy to do that. Sasanquas have a lot of different varieties. We think about Shishigashira as one of the smaller ones, but I got to tell you, I'm really crazy about Daydream. Daydream is a white semi-double sasanqua. It has just a little pink around the edges of the petals. And then, of course, it has the bright yellow stamens. It's just beautiful. And it's a plant that grows. I love evergreens because they're there all year long. And then when they burst into bloom, oh, my goodness. It's just a spectacular, spectacular sight. Chris also, this is interesting about his bacterial problems. He grew great squash and cucumbers, but then he moved the tomatoes to another place. Good idea. It's funny that some things, it's just like a pair of shoes, you know? Pair of shoes, same size foot, same height person, you know, all those kind of things. And one shoe doesn't fit that person. That other person hits perfect. It's just, that's the way vegetables can be, too. Stevens and McGee, how do you get rid of nut grass? Well, there are those who would tell you to move, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to tell you that the worst thing to do is to pull it out of the ground, okay? So don't do that. The second choice is the solarization process that I was just talking about. 6 mil clear plastic on top of that thing. You can cut those back. I have done that. I did cut that year. I cut them down to where they were about 2 inches tall, but you want plenty of green material to get zapped by the sunlight and the clear plastic, and then it can transfer into those nuts. But that's a summer process. That took from June all the way. I think I probably unwrapped it in September. Okay, it took all summer. And they were withered. They were gone. I have really not seen any in that area along in ages. So Chris and I agree we don't like new shoes. I think he's right. All right, now, Stephen, if the nut grass is a problem right now, and you can't solarize, and you're not going to grow vegetables there, there are products that you can use that will control it. Go talk to your garden center, go talk to your co-op, and they will give you a specific spray that will get in through there and get into the nut and take care of it. But then you have to, of course, rip them all out. So give yourself the opportunity to take a little time and decide what you want to do about it. And, yes, moving is always an option. So, oh, my goodness. Thank you very, very much for your kind words. How to overcome invasive coggin grass. Woo! It's taken over the rose garden. Should I just start over? Well, coggin grass is a big problem in the Southeast. I have a really nice magnet from a display about it. That was a good program about it, but they gave us the magnets that to remind you. And do not let coggin grass, in this case, take over Alabama. But, of course, it is a problem. The best approach is to get on the website msucares.com or the Alabama Cooperative Extension. If you're closer to that side of the state, perhaps they might have information for you. But keep up with who's doing this research, because every year they're finding a new way to fight this. I've read in other places there's I'm not going to tell you to go set fire to it, but they do everything short of setting fire to it, because it is such a problem. So in terms of whether to spray, whether to replace it, whether to dig it up, again, whether to move, no, you're not going to move. But you can control it. It's just very, very difficult, and you don't want to be throwing water at a five-alarm fire. So give yourself the opportunity to get into those websites and see what the researchers are doing and get the latest. I don't have the latest in front of me. I could tell you what it was a year ago, but it changes that quickly. Coggin grass is a terrible invader, and it's one that we've got to see to and got to keep out of our gardens. It's really, really a problem. Really, really is. There's so many. Let me put it this way. You can read those wonderful proverbs that say, "Sir, how do you grow this beautiful garden?" And the guru says, "I take away the things that keep it from growing." Well, you can't quite just do that in our part of the world, because the things that are competing are not only growing twice as fast, but they're also more likely to be the things that continue and persist beyond our valued crops, beyond the things that we're actually trying to grow, our favored plants. Okay? So I think in our part of the world, we need to give them something to grow, some reason to grow by taking away the issues, but we still have to keep up with those issues and get them farther away from where we are trying to grow things. That's why I say, for example, if you want to grow vegetables, we have to look at taking care of that nut grass in a different way. We're going to have to dig it up, replace it, and come back at it one at a time if it pops back up again. But if you have a patch of it in, for example, where your lawn used to be and it has been taken over by nut grass, you probably don't have quite enough sunlight in that area for the lawn grass to dominate, but the nut grass is pretty aggressive, so you have to kind of find that middle ground between them and get rid of the one without killing all of the other. We were laughing. Sometimes one plant will take over a person's garden. The only thing that's equally able to duke it out with the gripe weed in my place is the St. Augustine runners that run right into the same bed. It's not really a good battle. It's not pretty to watch at all, but it's one of those things you just have to figure out who your bigger enemy is and attack that first. And I think in the case of nut grass is always going to be the first one to take care of. It's always going to be the bigger enemy, quite frankly. Thank you so very much for talking to me about that today. You know, that's really the whole business of this program. I get to talk. You get to talk. We get to figure out stuff. We have so many sources of information in this world today that the fact that you're willing to listen to me and you know, tell me what you're doing so we can all learn together and get better at these things. Education's powerful. I'm never going to be sorry that I have as much education as I have, but I got to tell you, experience is equally important. So I appreciate you very much for bringing all that to me today. For example, don't buy soil. This is what Chris is telling us today. Get that plastic on earlier in the summer and use clear plastic. We can go there for JR. Lots going on. This, of course, is Stevie Wonder.
Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it. Always reaching out in vain, just taking the things not worth having. But don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, mama.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
When you're searching for the perfect piece of recreational property, we hope you think of Mississippi Land Bank. For generations, we've helped people finance the land in North Mississippi that they've always dreamed of owning, whether for hunting or fishing or just to get away. We mean it when we say we're here for you every step of the way, because our lenders are landowners, hunters, and fishermen too. Visit us today at mslandbank.com. That's mslandbank.com.
The best made-to-order lunch.
Well, I got a little garden in my backyard, a little hoeing, a little mowing, but the work ain't hard. It's the cutest little place that you ever did see. I've been working in the garden till I turned green.
Don't forget, the Magnolia Garden Festival will be at the Renaissance at Colony Park in Ridgeland, Mississippi on September the 20th. That's Saturday, 2 weeks, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And going to be lots of fun. Everybody can come. Everybody's going to learn something, and we're just going to have us ourselves a good old time. The urban forestry folks are promoting this, as well as some support from the DAR and, of course, from the Renaissance. So we're really happy to be there. It's going to be fun. Mark Peaches Patrick and I will be demonstrating planting fairly permanent plantings into large containers, shrubs, perennials. He does that better than anybody, and I've been picking his brain for a while, so we're going to tell you what to do and show you as well how to do that in a demonstration. Understand that we are going to get the chance to talk to Anna this morning.
Well, she just hung up. Hopefully she'll call right back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in that case, I'll go to the next piece of my puzzle this morning. Y'all know who Michio Kaku is? He's a scientist, just brilliant person. But one of my favorite stories from Michio Kaku himself is how he ordered up stuff that you're not supposed to have at your house. You know, you always hear about the kids that had the chemistry set and blew up the shed. Well, his mother said to him, you really can't do that. I think you're going to have to go to college. So he did. But he's letting us know today that we human beings, we have 46 chromosomes. Guess what? Potatoes have 48. Okay, let's talk to Anna. More on that later. Good morning.
Good morning. I heard you talking about invasive grasses.
Yeah, Kogan grass or Kogan grass.
Well, we've got one here in North Mississippi. it's called Japanese stilt grass.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it starts out, it looks so nice, like it's like a little ground cover. And
it's so pretty.
Yeah. And it's very, yeah. And then it grows tall like oats, and then it goes to flower, and then
you have it forever.
And the north wind comes along and blows it from your neighbor's property onto your property.
It's also known as blanket grass. That's the other name for it.
I don't know, but all I can
tell
you is...
Well, it's because it blankets the surface so easily.
My neighbor, who since died, has a beautiful patch of this grass. And it's spreading all along. It's a short street. Okay.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he died. And so his workers are not mowing it anymore. But the wind is bringing it to my
I was going to say, but it's going on its own and everywhere. Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah. Is there anything short of getting in there and fighting every bug known to man? Is there any other way to get rid of it?
No, there's really. I mean, the whole area, the whole thing of suppressing a patch of stilt grass or anything else like that that has really gotten entrenched is a difficult process. If I'm faced with doing it, I'm going to take a string trimmer, or if it's small enough, you know, some shears. I'm going to cut it all the way down to ground level, and as soon as it sprouts, I'm going to cut it down again.
Well, that's not a problem when it's in your lawn, because you know you
I understand
have some
that.
Grass.
I understand that, but when it's in a patch in a flower bed,
it gets into places where you don't mow.
No, that's correct. That's why I'm saying you have to take it out in that big patch first to keep it from seeding and moving into the rest of your area, you know, the neighborhood. But it's still a problem wherever it sprouts up. It's got to be either painted or pulled or something, because it will go. It's one of those plants that we can't actually slow it down once it gets started. And I'm sorry that your neighbor passed. I'm sorry that they don't know to control that particular plant.
Well, he's not there anymore because
right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm sorry that the people that are there now don't know to take care of it. I wish they did, but
well, unfortunately, the owner of that patch lives in the Delta.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll just send out a call out right now. If your house is next to Anna's, you need to come take care of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, see, we're next to the park, so I talked to the park district and said, this is going to spread into the park. Can't you do something about it? No, sorry.
No, it's going to spread right into the park.
It's a problem, and we can't make him cut the grass.
Right. And you know, I've said oftentimes that I do think sometimes we don't get to grow the things in our front yards because of the position of the homeowners group, or you know, the neighborhood, or whatever the ruling body is. But in this case, you kind of wish they had a couple of rules that would help out.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
but there's if there's nothing to cite, there's nothing to cite.
Down all the trees, and they tried to stop it, but no, they couldn't stop
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm. It's always all of these issues. All these issues tend to be
right?
It all tends to be a balance between community and community good and individual desire. There's so many things like that we have to balance. There, for example, the trees that I deal with all the time are almost as old as I am. They're 60, 70 year old trees. The people who planted them knew that they wanted shade. They knew that, but they also didn't think about the fact that 60 or 70 years from now, the limbs would drop and hit things and tear up stuff. And, you know, even if you have them pruned, you've still got that issue, because whatever you do in gardening has other sort of extra effects in many times. So while a lot of people grow one shrub and only one shrub, they grow a hedge of it, they like it, and they leave it be. The rest of us go, isn't that nice for about a minute and a half in the springtime? But we want more stuff, and so we end up with all these other plants, and sometimes they're not conducive to living together. Back to that individual community.
I guess it's a problem. We've only been here 25 years, and this house is quite old, and we're next. It's like living in the woods.
That's lovely. That's beautiful.
So we have everybody else's stuff.
I understand, but it's still beautiful. And you love it, or you wouldn't be there.
I like the area. Don't like the weeds.
I understand.
Thank you for talking with me.
Thank you, dear. Wonderful to hear from you today.
We're having buffering problems on the phone here.
Okay. Well, we will talk to you again soon. Thank you, Anna. You know, it's good to have a report of a plant that has really gotten away. And sometimes that's exactly what happens. I'm sure that little patch of stilt grass, when it was first there, was a couple of plants, and it looked nice, and it had a different kind of character to it and had a different presentation. But now that it has taken over and dominates everything else in that bed, it's not a great thing, not really a wonderful thing at all. I'll tell you, though, we have some more developments, Lance, on the coffee front. If you want me to deliver that coffee on the 20th, if you want me to have it in Ridgeland and you come pick it up from me, you can email the order. You can send it to gardenmamacommunity@gmail.com, and they will take care of it, and I will have it for you there at the Renaissance in Ridgeland on September the 20th. Now, this is one of the things that is so important, and that is that you understand that this is what I love. I hope you love it too, because this particular coffee blend is personal for me. It is also the future, really, of coffee. It's going to be small batch roasts and small. If you've been into the grocery stores and seen the price of, shall we say, average coffee, you will know that it has gone up and it hadn't gotten any better. So ours is much better. And it's, frankly, it's a coffee that you can enjoy any time of day and have a really good time while you're brewing it up, because you'll be thinking of me, and it smells good too. When I tell you that there are issues for women that other people just don't get, here it is. Bangs or no bangs. I've had so many people say, you cut bangs. That's right, I did. Well, I didn't, but, you know, nice guy that cuts my hair did. What is the argument about this? I say, says, oh, you're just trying to look youthful. You're trying to look young. No. In my case, I'm trying to cover up the fact that my forehead looks like the ladies in the original pilot of Star Trek, who were the magic women that had foreheads that went up about a foot off their head. That's how we feel. We old women, we don't necessarily look that way, but that's how we feel. And sometimes having a little bit of hair can help to slow that down. I don't look quite so blank when I look at myself. I have that opportunity. Can't grow a beard, but today's National Beard Day.
Mine grows like I have the mange. You know,
I don't know if that's a recommendation.
No,
or not.
That's what I'm saying.
The longer it
gets, the better it gets. You know,
by about December, yours is fine.
Yeah, once I get some cold on the face, it only works when the weather's
that's
cool.
Not true. It's always fine. You ginger folks have that. Y'all have that different rate of growing.
I asked my dad, I said, why did you quit? I mean, one day came home and I'd never seen him without a beard. And my sister, I don't think, had ever seen my father without a beard. And we came home one day and had to be like the 90s or something. And she had to be 8 or 9. And he walked out in the garage as we were pulling in. And my sister didn't know who it was. She thought we were getting robbed. And I finally asked him.
Maybe
one day,
that's why he had to shave.
I said, "How vain are you to never grow a beard again? Because it went white or something." He goes, "No, man, it just grows in every direction." And I got tired of messing with it, you know, and trimming and doing. And so he finally just shaved it off. And I get to that point sometimes.
I understand. I had literally the space on the aisle in every place you go now has like 17 beard products because y'all are so worried about it.
I mean, none of them work. I mean, it's just grease. So, you know, can't breathe or anything. But no, mine just is so wild. It goes all over every cowlick you can have on a face. I don't have them in my hair, obviously, but
that's interesting.
My face has them. Yeah.
I like that. I don't know what to think about that. I do know that when my father's hair changed color, his beard went white first. So mm-hmm. A lot of people shave then. You're right about that. Do you know who Galleria Melonelia is? No, you don't, but I do. It's the greater wax moth. Now, why do we care about the greater wax moth? Because these waxworms can degrade polyethylene plastic. Mm-hmm. We're moving into very different parts of the recycling potential, but the Society for Experimental Biology is letting us know that these are now plastivore caterpillars, and they can eat a plastic bag, those bags we were talking about, being out in the heaps.
What do they do with them? I mean, obviously it comes out the other end, but is it something usable, or do they just die?
Well, here's the problem, which has been the problem. They've been existent, but it kills them.
Yeah.
There are things that we humans would like to do that would kill us, so we try not to do that, but these particular caterpillars have a big compulsion. So, of course, the folks at the society there are trying to figure out ways that they can make them live longer and survive this process. Because if you look at it from the philosophic view of the entire earth, there are people who will tell you that that's how it's intended to be done, is that these caterpillars will sacrifice their future moths in order to rid us of these plastics. There are other people who say we'd have a whole lot more of these moths if y'all weren't killing them with the plastic, killing the caterpillars, okay? So it's, again, it's a case where you have to look at the whole population or the individual and figure out where the balance lies. But every year, there's over 100 million tons, that's a British ton, of polyethylene produced. It is chemically resilient, and it's very difficult to decompose. So that's why finding that the plastic-only diet works for them is helpful, but the fact that it kills them tells us more than we might want to know about that particular. That may not be the way to get there. That nickel business and finding other things that help the process may turn out to be more powerful. I can only imagine that somewhere there's someone writing a science fiction script right now, The Revenge of the Plastivore Caterpillars. You know, they'll come after us once they figure out that we actually
Stephen King's them. Working on it.
See, I'm
right
telling
now.
You, he's busy. He stays busy all the time. No question about that. I had a question this week, by the way, that was, is it too early to start spraying X, Y, or Z? The answer is yes, probably it is. In this case, it was to spray for scale on camellias. And so unless you're using something that is, I'm just going to say no, this is not the time to do it. If we were spraying with pyrethrin in the springtime because we saw the crawlers, or even with spinosad in the spring, that would be one thing. But this time of year, it's too early to start spraying with the oil. The temperatures are not conducive to that. And even after they are, I still want to wait a couple of weeks past the first time the temperatures go into the range for spraying oil, simply because we might warm up again. Remember, we're still in hurricane season, y'all. There's still plenty of time for there to be a different set of problems. Now, if your camellias obviously have scale insects on them, this would be the time, if it is necessary, to use that systemic that you use as a drench underneath the plants. You know that I'm not in favor of those processes unless it's a prized plant, can't be replaced, dominant position in the landscape, all those reasons why you would want to go to any lengths to save it, okay? So all of those things make sense to me, and I hope they will to you too. Something to think about. Is it too early to? Probably. Yep, when I tell you that you've got fewer chromosomes than a potato, I'm not kidding. But that's okay. We'll be right back.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional, because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every
for a flipping good time.
So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. Oh, rock me, mama, like a wind and a rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train.
Whatever you're whatever you're thinking about growing, whatever you want to grow, this is the place for you. The greenest spot, as we say, on your radio dial or perhaps even on your stream. This is the Garden Mama Show. I promised myself I would say it three times, and I've only said it twice. Don't forget September the 20th. This is going to be so much fun. I want everybody to come to Ridgeland to the Renaissance. We will be there from 10 to 3 doing all sorts of stuff. It's a great garden fest. You're going to have a good time, and I promise you, you will have a good time. We're going to have a blast. Just doing it's going to be fun, and you're going to have even more fun if you're able to attend with us. The University of Basel has let us know that they are now here we go. We've had plant-inspired this and that and this and the other thing. We've had insect-inspired robots. We've had, you know, all of these, the pollinator little tiny bees that are shaped, little robots that are shaped like them. Well, now we're looking at a plant-inspired molecule that can charge everything else. It can hold four different things using sunlight. That this is the key step. Yep. Toward artificial photosynthesis. I'm so jazzed about this. Previously, they were able to do this to an extent, but it was only by basically using up more light than you could possibly ever recover from the process. So now that they've been able to take the step into using a dimmer light, it becomes more feasible, more practical to do this particular real-world application of the solar fuel production. Natural photosynthesis, of course, temporarily stores two positive and two negative charges. I say of course, but you may not know that. It does that. And this is something that can replicate that process. We haven't had this before. That's why this is so exciting. The new molecule modeled on plant photosynthesis under the influence of light, but not as much light as the previous process has tried to do. And then this in turn could translate into the conversion of sunlight into carbon-neutral fuels. Wouldn't that be amazing? And once again, we would have plants to think about it, to thank for it. I have so many examples, and I know you do too, of parts of our world that have been completely changed by the advent of bringing in what we know about plants, what we learn about them. There's always just so much that you can understand about it all. And I have another piece I need to let you know about, and that is, of course, we're working on breath work. The people at our favorite PLOS network has some information that they're bringing to us about how breath work is actually beneficial to our brains, not just because it calms them down, but because it opens other pathways and opens other parts of our brains. I'm going to study that. And apparently it has to do with listening to different kinds of music. So I like that. I'm fascinated by their work in that, because we do need to find more ways to reduce stress, to reduce anxiety, and to manage it. You're never going to get rid of stress. Stress is part of the creative process. If we don't have it, then really nothing much is going to happen. We'd all just kind of lie around and, you know, I don't know, wait for something else to happen, which it wouldn't. So I think that having the opportunity to work on capturing other processes that will balance some of the things that we run into and some of the things that we encounter, that we have that opportunity to do that. So that's fun. That's really fun. Now, there are a couple of other notes about, we're working on some things about the coffee that, yes, you can pick it up or you can order it to be mailed to you. You can send me an email, gardencommunity@gmail.com, or, of course, you can give me all these other bits and pieces of info. You can go straight through the newsletter. Just let me know what you want to do, because I really want you to have this coffee. It's a good one. It's really, really fun. Lance, I have one more bit of information for you today. Today is Coffee Ice Cream Day.
I love it already.
And I got to tell you that if I had any right here, I would go make ice cream. If I had an ice cream maker, I'd go make some out of it. Coffee ice cream is particularly good in a milkshake, mm-hmm. just in case you didn't know that.
I used to take a whole bean Starbucks or whatever and grind it up into that finest powder with the, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. with the little bullet thing, and then just find any type of ice cream and put it in there.
Turn
man.
It into yeah. coffee. Oh, yeah. Turn it into good coffee. Stuff. That's funny.
Lowbrow. I know a lot of lowbrow tricks.
Yep. I like that. I like that. Somebody was talking to me about elderberry wine, Ooh. And I had to admit that the bottle that I had was absolutely lovely, but I don't know who's making that this year. We'll have to kind of pay attention to all of that. Tomorrow is, I don't know how to say this, tomorrow's one day closer to the full moon, so your feeds, all of your social medias, and probably everybody at church is going to be talking about this, because this is a big eclipse. The moon is low to the sky, so it's going to be a big moon. Not as big as the record one, but still, it's going to be a big event. And I just find that to always be so great for sports events in the fall, especially. That harvest moon can really put you in a good mood to get outside and do some stuff.
Well, that and the elderberry honey wine, or you can get that. Three Lakes makes one. It's about $12.99. The elderberry honey wine, you get that for about $27.99.
I didn't know.
Munchweitz elderberry red wine, that's about $7. Gordon's fine free delivery.
I'll bet it is.
Yeah. And you got Breitenbach. So it seems like there are some that are ready to get the elderberry wine to you this year, Garden.
Okay.
Colorado Cellars, too, yes.
Now, Colorado Cellars does a lot of interesting things, mm-hmm. So I'll go for that. That's who
I am. That's a $17, $18 bottle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll be looking for that in my mail
Monday
from you.
Right.
I know you're going you. to jump right on that.
Yeah, I will get you a bottle of elderberry wine as long as we can drink it. And I've never had elderberry wine. I'm sure it's delicious.
It's very tasty. I got one sip before I passed it around, and it was
very
popular.
Oh, I thought you were about to say passed out.
No, it was very popular.
Moonshine wine.
Oh, my goodness. No. Now, this week, someone said to me, how often can you plant beets? You can plant beets every week if you want to, but that's going to be a big harvest. So I would say if you have four people in your family, plant 2 or 3 feet of beets in a pot or in a row. Come back in 2 weeks and plant again so that then you have a little space between your harvests. That's a good question and a good, I hope, the appropriate answer. On the other hand, if you're trying to go to market with them, what you need to pay attention to is the fact that Detroit red beets will take a little bit longer to get to be edible size than some of the others. For example, the Tokyo Cross white beets are real fast. They're not as fast as radishes, but they're real fast. So give yourself the opportunity to try both of those things, and then you can have, it's another case where you can spread the harvest out over several weeks simply by planting different varieties. And I like that a lot myself. This week coming up, I have 2 or 3 things that I need to get planted into the ground. And I've also got some stuff that I got to transfer to a bigger pot. Everything's getting so well root bound. I'm going to work on that. I look forward to hearing what y'all are up to. I know that folks are looking forward to some events that are coming up. We're going to talk about some of that next week because those are all happening through September and October. And, of course, then on the 20th, we will be in Ridgeland. And I'm trying to get Peaches to come in and do radio with me that morning, but he may have to be out setting up what we're doing. So we'll either talk to him or we will see him on the 20th. Either way. I don't know how to tell you this, but it's National Read a Book Day. It's also Fight Procrastination Day. I'm thinking maybe I'll do some of that tomorrow, or maybe the next day, or maybe the day after that. How long can we procrastinate for? Well, give yourself a minute, put your priorities in order, and give yourself a chance to get right back here again next week for the Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
I'm a U.S. catfish farmer. I work hard to make sure you get the best tasting, healthiest fish available every time you order U.S. catfish. The Catfish Trail features restaurants throughout the Southeast that support local catfish farmers and serve it up right. Grilled, fried, or blackened, po'boys, salads, or tacos. Every restaurant on the Catfish Trail has a dish worth stopping for. Find your new favorite restaurant at uscatfish.com.
This is professional ballplayer and former Mississippi State Bulldog Jake Mangum.
Mississippi is my home. I've been all over the state and seen just about all there is to see. As a native, joining Farm Bureau was a no-brainer. They're there when I need them, with competitive rates and exceptional customer service. If you aren't already on the team, it's time to join Farm Bureau. Visit favrates.com for great rates on home and auto insurance. Or find a local agent at msfbins.com. Farm Bureau Insurance. Go with the home team.
I'm here at the show.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.